if you eat red meat and seafood, you're going to have more creatine within your muscles. But even those that eat even a lot of red meat or seafood, they can still benefit a little bit from creatine supplementation. And the reason why is because the amount that we produce in our body is quite limited, and the amount that we get in food is quite limited as well. So if you want to get, for example, 5 grams of creatine with a food source like salmon, you would have to eat about 2.5 pounds of salmon to get 5 grams.
Hello, everyone. This is Vikas, and you are listening to Run with FitPage. Tata Mumbai Marathon has just concluded, and we are getting back to our training hopefully pretty soon. And that is why today's discussion is relevant. It is one of the topics that may help you with your running performance improvement if done properly. And today we are discussing creatine for endurance athletes. I have with me Dr. Scott Forbes, a worldwide authority, to talk about creatine. He loves research in this field, and you will see from the conversation how his experience is so relevant for this discussion. We have had this question where creatine, whether it was popular for strength training population only, or was it good for endurance athletes like you and I as well? We also had questions around myths, whether it hurts us if you start supplementing and done inappropriately, for example, or are there any other consequences, negative impacts, etc., of creatine that may be available in and among the running population? And I thought it's important for all of us to go through this discussion with Dr. Forbes and understand whether and if it really helps or hurts, whether it really improves our performances or not, and if it does, what's the right way of doing it. Let's get into this conversation in talking all about creatine, its supplementation, right dosage, and the timing of it. Let's welcome Dr. Forbes to the show. Dr. Forbes, welcome to Run with FitPage. It's an absolute pleasure of mine to have you with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here. Anytime I get to talk about creatine, I get really excited. So thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Pleasure is ours. And you're joining us all the way from Canada. Thank you so much for accepting to be in the call, even with different time zones and reschedules, etc. We will go into the masterclass of creatine for sure today. How about we get started with, before that, with the background of yours, academically, what you have been up to?
Yeah, so I have a PhD in exercise physiology, and I completed that at the University of Alberta, which is a big kind of research university in Canada. And then I actually went on and did a postdoctoral fellowship looking at exercise and nutrition on brain health. So that was kind of a unique experience. But currently, I'm an associate professor at Brandon University in Canada, and I conduct research and teach classes in the exercise science. I'm also a clinical exercise physiologist through our Canadian Society for Exercise Physiology, and I also am a certified sport nutritionist through the International Society of Sport Nutrition. So I have a few credentials behind my name, but mostly just have conducted research on creatine supplementation.
Awesome. And these are very relevant credentials, and that is exactly why I requested for these. Now, why and how the interest in creatine for you to research to start with?
Yeah, so I did my master's degree at the University of Saskatchewan under the guidance of Phil Chilibeck. And he was one of the first to study the combination of creatine and exercise to enhance older adult function and muscle performance. And during that time, I actually got to collaborate with Dr. Darren Kandow. So Dr. Darren Kandow is another kind of prominent creatine researcher. And he was one of Phil Chilibeck's PhD students. And so we connected at that time and we started to do some creatine research. And essentially it's been about 15 years of continued collaboration through both Dr. Darren Kandow and Phil Chilibeck and myself. So it's been a great journey.
Awesome. I remember coming in touch with creatine for the very first time when I started to strength train, remember, in a gym, and my trainer, he suggested me a creatine, and he said, hey, you should supplement with this. I remember I used to know almost nothing about supplementation at all, and he said, Vikas, you have to have creatine. It will help you build muscle right away. And I had this creatine, I remember, and I started feeling itchy in my body. And I was like, what did I have just now? And then as the time progressed, you know, of course, there was regular supplementation of creatine. But what it became very popular with, as I started to understand this better, that was that creatine was very popularly supplemented among the strength training candidates, the gym goers who were primarily working out a lot, lifting heavy weights, etc. And I could never put my head around why it was happening. So I thought we start from the very basic. What exactly is creatine and why it is so popular among the strength training people?
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, what is creatine? Creatine is made up of three different amino acids. So amino acids are just the building blocks of protein. So anytime you're consuming protein, you're consuming different amino acids that are put together in a certain way. But if you put three of those amino acids together, it creates creatine. And so we can get it from our diet, mainly from red meat and seafood, or you can buy it as a supplement, or you can actually get some creatine formed within your body. So in your liver and kidney, you can put those three amino acids together. We could also make creatine in our brain as well. So that's pretty cool. But once you get creatine into your bloodstream, about 95% of that is taken up into the muscle. And some of that gets converted into a molecule, which is known as phosphocreatine. And the reason why that molecule is important is because it can make energy in the muscle very, very rapidly. So that's kind of some of the basics of creatine. And then, as you mentioned, it became popular, and we know it's very effective to enhance muscle mass and muscle strength in that bodybuilding or strength training population. So if you combine creatine with strength training, you can make your muscles bigger, stronger, and enhance functionality as well.
Got it. Yeah. So it's natural that it got more and more popular among strength training population, because as people grew and as they started to work out and they wanted to move towards hypertrophy, seemed like they needed interventions that would help them. Then my point is, equally, it has become now important amongst endurance athletes as well. So I wanted to understand, how does it then help among endurance athletes, and why should a marathon runner, for example, should be consuming creatine?
Yeah, so I need to start out by saying that there's a lot less research done on creatine and endurance performance compared to creatine and strength training. So there's a substantial amount of evidence to show that it can make your muscles bigger and stronger. But for endurance athletes, there's actually lots of reasons to consider creatine as well. So first, we actually know that combining creatine with carbohydrates can increase the amount of carbohydrates within the muscle, and it's stored as muscle glycogen. So we know that before running a marathon, it's important to consume a lot of carbohydrates. You might In Canada, we have pasta. We eat a lot of pasta before we run marathons. We know that you could actually store a little bit more glycogen in your muscle if you take creatine with that as well. So that can be an advantage. We also know that creatine can prevent some stress in the muscle as well. So it can reduce some of the muscle damage and inflammation that's associated with long distance running. And then I would say kind of the third reason is there's some pretty cool animal research that has looked at really intense training with and without creatine. So what they actually did was, it's called chronic low frequency stimulation. Essentially, they provide a little electrical impulse to the muscle in these rats, and that causes the muscle to contract. And they would do that for long periods of time. So for example, like 12 hours in a day. So really extreme training. And they would do this for multiple days. And what they found was that they could actually increase the amount of mitochondria in the muscle. So mitochondria is really important. That's where you use oxygen to get more energy. And marathon runners, for example, have a lot of mitochondria. It's very, very important that they have not only a lot of mitochondria, but good functioning mitochondria as well. And what they found was that also, if they took creatine, what they found was it did not impair their abilities to create more mitochondria. So that was good. So it wasn't bad for these rats. But what they actually found was that it maintained the fast twitch characteristics of the muscle. So why would that be important for marathon runners? It's important because if you need to run up a hill, if you need to change pace in a race, if you need to kind of finish the race with a strong effort, that characteristic of the muscle becomes really, really important. And that's where creatine could be a benefit.
Awesome. I have so many supplementary questions just to set the basics, and then we get into how should runners be looking at it. So the first question is, does it only increase the number of mitochondria or its density as well? And is that important too?
Yeah, so it's not going to enhance mitochondria, but it's also not going to impair it. So the key part is that it's actually going to maintain kind of that fast twitch characteristics of the muscle. So the ability to produce a lot of force. And I think, again, that's not a major player in a marathon, but it does play a role, particularly, as I mentioned, if you're trying to run up a hill or change pace in a race or just, have that finishing kick. That's where it could be really, really important.
Right. And the second point is when we talked about it may help possibly store a little more carbohydrate in the muscle. So the muscle glycogen seems, that's positive. Does it also help with the liver glycogen storage or not?
That's a great question. And I have not seen any studies that have looked at liver glycogen, but I think that would be a very important study to do. So the only studies that I've seen have looked at muscle glycogen and showed enhanced recovery of glycogen synthesis and showing that you could actually get a little bit more glycogen into the muscle with creatine combined with carbohydrates. And so there was actually a really cool study that came out of Australia through the Australia Institute of Sport. It wasn't in marathon runners, it was in cyclists, but they did a 120 kilometer time trial. And what they did every 10 kilometers, they did either 1 kilometer or 4 kilometers, and that alternated again every 10 kilometers for that 120 kilometer time trial. And the individuals that got creatine were able to perform at a higher power output in the last 1 kilometer and 4 kilometer sprint in that 120 kilometer time trial. So again, it shows that kind of some benefits of creatine to change pace. And they also showed that basically, as they got more creatine, they also got a little bit more glycogen in the muscle as well.
Got it. And I may be totally off, but because you talked about this study, I'm just starting to think, could it be that it's also in some ways working on reducing your perceived sense of exertion? Do you think that could be the case as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know interventions that change how you feel when you're exercising can make a big difference. So there's actually some really cool studies out of Italy that have shown a variety of different ways to change how exercise feels. And I think that creatine could potentially do that. There is some studies to show that ratings of perceived exertion is reduced when taking creatine. And that would be a really cool thing. So I'm going to mention a few non-creatine studies. So one was actually, what they did was they had them exercise in front of a screen. And sometimes the screen would flash happy faces. And sometimes it would flash angry faces. And so when they actually saw the happy faces, it made exercise feel easier and it enhanced their exercise performance. So I always think about that when I'm coaching, for example. I try to be as positive as possible to the athletes and try to smile and encourage the individuals, have good positive self-talk to them, or they would have positive self-talk as well. So all those things can actually make exercise feel easier. The other thing that we actually know in reverse is that if you have mental fatigue, that actually makes exercise feel harder. So if you are giving your athletes a lot of instruction right before a race, that's going to cause them to think a lot, and that could actually reduce their exercise performance by making exercise actually feel harder.
And I can relate with it anecdotally. So I have had a coach who helps me with my training. Though we have a large coaching platform, but I have had a coach who I've been working with for several years. He's based in the US. His name is Professor Jeff Messo. And every email that I get, almost every day I get an email after my workout. Even if I have really, really bad workout, he makes it look so positive that I feel like I have to work out next day again. And I just start to feel less miserable. He'll find something positive out of it. So the point that you're mentioning is so good. And it just helps me feel that, hey, no, I did something good. And maybe I want to just get out again and not feel that possibly spent or tired. So that's true.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Awesome. So now that we have set the background that creatine is important for endurance athletes as well. And here it seemed like we talked about that one, it could be perceived sense of exertion being reduced. It could be it's helping with increasing the number of mitochondria. That will help us push a little more towards the end or power up the incline faster. And we all runners can relate with the moment we see an incline, we start to dread that, right, forever. So all of these are great things. Now, before we get to supplementation and start to talk about how should it be done, my question is, do people really need to supplement? And why I ask this is because you also said it can also be made within the body, by the body, within the brain. Also in the, I think you talked about nutritionally, other than supplementation, it can be created as well. So do we need to supplement to start with?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you eat red meat and seafood, you're going to have more creatine within your muscles. But even those that eat even a lot of red meat or seafood, they can still benefit a little bit from creatine supplementation. And the reason why is because the amount that we produce in our body is quite limited. And the amount that we get in food is quite limited as well. So if you want to get, for example, 5 grams of creatine, and we can talk about different amounts that's required for supplementation. But if you want to get 5 grams with a food source like salmon, you would have to eat about 2.5 pounds of salmon to get wow. 5 grams. So it might be possible in one day if you eat a crazy amount of salmon. But it's very challenging to do so. And that's why we know that most people are going to benefit from a supplementation because, it's just very challenging to get it from the food and or produced in the body.
Yeah, I used to think that getting fiber of 30 gram per day for me is very difficult. And now I see that to get even five grams through salmon, it's like almost 1 kilogram of salmon to be eaten. So not only it's bizarrely expensive, but almost non-digestible to this volume.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
Awesome. So now with that, how about we go through how should a runner actually look at supplementing? For example, if I want to, so I have my marathon in 12 weeks from now. I'll be running the Paris Marathon. Suppose I were to be the candidate who wants to start supplementation, how should I look at creatine supplementation? What should I buy to start with? And what should I look for in the ingredients, for example? And then how should I start?
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, I'd recommend creatine monohydrate. So there's many alternative forms of creatine, but creatine monohydrate is the most studied. We know it's very effective, and it's also the cheapest form of creatine as well. So that's what I would recommend.
Should be 100% creatine monohydrate?
Yeah, it'll be 99.99 pure creatine, I guess. So that's what you're going to be looking for. There are brands that are independently tested, so that's nice to know that you're buying just creatine monohydrate and it's not contaminated with any other things. Just like if you're buying any other supplement, you need to just make sure what it says on the package is actually what's in the thing that you're buying. So that's really important as well. And then the amount of creatine, there's been a little bit of debate on kind of the dose of creatine. We know that taking as little as 3 grams per day is going to saturate your muscles. So you don't have to take a lot of creatine. Most people will take 5 grams of creatine per day. And we know that that is a very effective strategy as well. And a lot of our research, we actually use a relative dosing strategy. So that means it's relative to your body weight. So we actually use 0.1 grams of creatine per kilogram of body weight per day. So it might be a little bit higher than what most people consumed. So if you're a 70 kilogram person, it would be like taking 7 grams of creatine per day.
Okay. Okay. So if I bought creatine monohydrate, now what could be the right way of consuming it? Should it be 7 gram? I'm okay with up to 4 to 5 grams. And after that, I remember in the start, I started to have loose motions and I could not digest it properly, I felt. And so maybe I went overboard. I don't know. But question is, should it be done once a day or could it be split in 2 dosage? And if it is 1 or 2, then when should we actually take it, before the run, after the run? When should it be done?
Yeah. Oftentimes they'll recommend that you load with creatine for a week.
Okay.
So that's actually where you take 20 grams of creatine, but usually it's separated into 4 doses throughout the day. So you take 5 grams in the morning, 5 grams at lunch, 5 grams at dinner time, and then 5 grams before you go to sleep to get 20 grams in the day. If you do that for a week, you can saturate your muscles. But we actually know with research now that that's not necessary. And a lot of people might have some issues with that. It might upset their stomach a little bit. And so what you can do is you can actually take a lower dose of creatine, as low as 3 grams per day, which is a lot less than 20. And it might just take a little bit longer to saturate your muscles, but you will saturate your muscles in about 28 days and you will get the benefits from that creatine supplementation. So the other question you ask is, when is the kind of the best time of the day to consume creatine? I believe that that's a pretty small effect, but what some of the studies do suggest is that consuming it close to the exercise session is the best. So there was a study where they did single leg cycling, and so they fatigued that one leg. So it was like a 1 hour exhaustive exercise with that one leg. After the exercise, they got creatine, and what they found was the exercise leg was able to take up the creatine faster and more than the non-exercise leg. So it suggests that when you're loading with creatine or just starting to take creatine, I recommend to take it close to your exercise session.
And it could be before or after, doesn't matter.
Yeah, so we've also done studies looking at before, after, and during training as well. These were with regards to some of the strength training benefits, but we found no difference. So I think whatever you prefer, consume it either before, during, or after exercise. It's not going to make any difference. Probably the best thing to do, though, is to consume it with either a carbohydrate source or a protein source. Both those are going to stimulate insulin, and that's going to help with creatine uptake as well. So if you're consuming other supplements or other with your food, for example, that's maybe the best time to take creatine.
What I try to do, I don't know whether it's the correct way or not, but it works for me. I mix it in my breakfast. And
that's a great strategy. Yeah.
So it doesn't taste anything different. It just with the yogurt and with the fruits, it just mixes well, and I can take it fairly easily. Now the question is, if you load it for a week, after that, if you normalize, and now you need to take just possibly 0.1 gram per kilogram body weight. Do you need to take it regularly throughout, or after loading, there has to be a break after several weeks, etc., or not?
Yeah, so once your muscles are saturated with creatine, and if you do that loading phase, they'll be saturated in 1 week, so very, very rapidly. Typically, the recommendation is just to go to a maintenance dose of about 3 to 5 grams per day, or that relative dosing strategy, as you mentioned, the 0.1 grams per kilogram of body weight per day. So you just go to that. And then we've actually provided creatine for every single day for multiple years. And we know that it's safe and effective. But there's also people that maybe don't want to take creatine every single day for multiple years. And what we actually know is that even if you take it 3 times a week, or days that you exercise, you can actually get the benefits of creatine supplementation as well. So that's another strategy. And we also know that if you stop taking creatine, it takes about 4 to 6 weeks to return back to baseline. So some people will supplement with creatine for about 4 weeks, then they'll stop taking creatine for 4 weeks, and then they'll get back on creatine. So they'll cycle on and off creatine. No one has actually studied that before, but my personal opinion is that that's going to be an effective strategy. And if you want to save a little bit of money and not consume creatine all the time, then that might be a good strategy for you as well.
Got it. Makes sense. Now, will there be a difference between two different sexes, men and women, or for both, is the same strategy?
Yeah, so the strategies are going to be the same, but we actually know that estrogen can influence creatine's effectiveness. So depending on your phase of the menstrual cycle, there could be a small difference. Abby Smith-Ryan is a great researcher in the U.S., and she's tried to look at performance differences between different phases of the menstrual cycle and hasn't found any differences from a performance standpoint. But she did find a little bit of difference with regards to water retention. And I think more research needs to be done looking at sex differences, so the differences between males and females.
Got it. So far, it's safe to say that it's almost similar for both sexes, and it's indifferent from a creatine consumption point of view. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that it's very similar. There is one study that actually looked at how much creatine was in the muscle between males and females, and it actually showed a little bit higher concentration in females compared to males. And what we know is that if you have more creatine in your muscle to begin with before you supplement, you tend to be a little bit less responsive. So we've shown that in some of our research as well, that females tend to be, it still works, but not quite to the same degree as it does in males.
Got it. Right. Interesting. And it makes so much sense. I'm thinking the as people are listening to it, they must be starting to think that they need to start with the creatine supplementation. And the next question they are going to ask me is that, are there any side effects of it? You talked about water retention, and this is one question actually. Some of our listeners have spoken to us in different forums that I don't take creatine because I think it helps me with gaining my weight. Is that really true? Does it help retain more water?
So while you're loading your muscles with creatine, you're going to retain a little bit more water, but very similar to actually carbohydrates. So if you get more glycogen into your muscle, that also brings a little bit more water into the muscle. From a creatine standpoint, that water actually stimulates the muscle to grow. So you're going to get bigger and stronger muscles over a period of time with creatine. We do know that you're going to gain a little bit of weight with creatine. So most people, in most of the research that we've studied, they gain about 0.8 of a kilogram after they've taken creatine for a period of time. And mostly that's due to an increase in muscle size and muscle mass. So there's maybe a little bit due to water retention, but it's much smaller than what people think. And most of it is actually just having more muscles. And more muscles could be a benefit for running and performance. And again, there was actually that study that was done through the Australia Institute of Sport. They wanted to look at the impact of that weight gain on performance. So some of the cyclists thought that if you're cycling up a hill, then that increase in body weight from creatine supplementation could be a detriment to their performance. So they actually tried to assess that, and they actually found that on the hill climb, it actually made no difference, even though they had that increase in body weight. So it didn't negatively impact cycling performance up a hill.
Got it. Yeah, that was going to be my question as well. So thank you for addressing, because there is this phenomena amongst runners that to move your body from point A to point B, and having a great running economy means you need to have less mass. The heavier you are, the more difficult it's going to be for you to move effectively. So thank you for addressing that. It's important. Now, next question that comes to my mind is, how do I know that on the basis of creatine consumption, it's helping me necessarily? Of course, there could be midterm to long-term impacts. I might see or might not see. Or could people say that, hey, I'm not sure. How do I know that I have started to make a positive difference?
Yeah, so first of all, the effectiveness of creatine is very small. So it's when we look at the research, it might have a small improvement on performance, but it's not as big of an impact as like just good training, good sleep, eating sufficient carbohydrates, getting enough protein. Those are kind of the main things that you have to do. Creatine is just kind of I call it the icing on the cake. So it can make the cake better, but it's not the most important part of the cake. And so I think that's important to understand as well. And I get that question that you asked all the time. And it's actually very difficult to know if the supplement is truly making an impact. It's important to maybe monitor your weight a little bit when you start to supplement with creatine. If your weight goes up a little bit, that could represent that water is being brought into your muscle, and that could be a good thing. So I know that runners are afraid to have any gain in body mass, but if you have a little gain in body mass when you start to supplement with it, that's actually a positive effect. So that's one way to know that perhaps it's getting into the muscle. Besides that, it's just monitor your performance. There's no really true way to know that it's actually getting into your muscle unless you perform some sort of like muscle biopsy or advanced scientific technique.
Right. No, makes absolute sense. Now, As I start to take creatine, for example, are there any side effects that I should be aware of? Are there any symptoms I should be aware of that even though those are occurring to me, I know that it's normal? And are there any warning signs at all based on which I could figure that, hey, it's a contraindication and I should stop?
Yeah, for sure. So there's a few people that have GI distress, so it might upset their stomach a little bit. So that's where I would avoid that loading phase, and I would just take a low dose of creatine. I'd also do as you suggest and mix it with your food or your breakfast. That's a great strategy as well. If you're consuming it with other things, it's going to be easier on your stomach. So there are a few individuals that have that kind of side effect. But really, the only consistent side effect that's reported in the literature is that small increase in body mass, which translates to increased muscle mass and muscle size. So that's really kind of the only negative, or not negative, that's a positive side effect of creatine. Yeah.
Awesome. Out of curiosity, how is creatine produced externally? Is it from vegetables, fruits? Where is it coming from?
Yeah, so there's kind of two different places in the world that really create creatine. One is in Germany and the other is China. They synthetically make the creatine. So it's actually plant-based formation. So it's actually, if you buy a creatine supplement, it's all plant-based. So that's kind of important for people to know as well.
Wow, awesome. Yeah, that's what I wanted to affirm through you, because a number of people in India are vegetarian and they are concerned at times whether it's coming from egg or it's coming from meat, etc. So that's why I asked. Awesome.
Yeah, that's a great question. And we actually know that vegans or vegetarians, because they're not consuming red meat or seafood, they actually have lower amounts of creatine within their muscle, and they tend to be more responsive to creatine supplementation. So I think a plant-based diet, vegetarian diet, is very healthy, and I highly recommend it. The only risk is you actually have lower amounts of creatine. So that's where the supplement might actually be even more important in that population.
Right. And does creatine need to be supplemented with protein necessarily, meaning I've seen as you start to train, the importance of protein becomes exponentially important. And here in India specifically, we are pretty carbohydrate rich country. And as a result, most of the food that we eat has about up to 80% carbohydrate, for example. And so getting the protein that's required for us as athletes is not as easy. And so whey protein or plant-based protein is something that we start supplementing with. Do you suggest when people are taking creatine, they also need to keep protein in check, or that's independent?
There is a bit of an interaction, because if you take protein, that stimulates insulin, that can help with creatine uptake. But beyond that, they're kind of working independently, but they're both important, particularly for endurance athletes. They might actually require more protein than strength-based athletes. And I think a lot of people don't know that. But for example, your mitochondria or all the enzymes are made out of protein. So you want more mitochondria, you want those oxidative enzymes. And so protein becomes really important when you're performing endurance exercise.
Great. Now, it's not the point or not the discussion about mitochondria for sure, but because we've been discussing it, there will be some of the listeners who will start to ask, okay, so what if I have more mitochondria? How does it help me improve my performance? If you don't mind, because of your background, would you just want to take a small 1 minute class and explain to our listeners what exactly is the role of mitochondria?
Yeah, so we know that aerobic metabolism, or your ability to use oxygen, is really, really important. So we know that endurance athletes, marathon runners, they might do what's known as a VO2 max test. And essentially it's a graded exercise test where you start out running slowly and you'll run a little bit faster and faster and faster and faster every couple minutes until you can't run anymore. and they'll measure the maximum amount of oxygen that your body can take in, transport, and use. And where it's being used is actually in the mitochondria. So that's where you're going to be producing a lot of energy so that you can continue to exercise. And so it's a very important part of the muscle. And again, that's where oxygen is actually being used. That's why we need to breathe a little bit faster when we exercise. Again, it's really important for endurance athletes to have a good VO2 max and a good number of mitochondria and a good ability to utilize that oxygen.
Got it. Yeah, no, that's very important. And thank you that you addressed it, because also some misconception that exists is about VO2 max or about the performance, that it is to do with the maximum oxygen consumption, but that's only the half work done. It's also the transportation and the utilization. As a very lay person, what I try and say is if you're not using it appropriately, it is similar to you starting your engine of vehicle but not putting it in the gear. So you'll not get anywhere regardless of what you try to do. And I try to explain that to people, and in some ways it makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that. So yeah, VO2 max, I'm trying to say that it's important, but it's also not the be all and end all. We know that running economy is also important. So there's lots of other factors that can influence exercise performance.
No, for sure. For sure. And that's not the topic of today's discussion. So forgive me if I went slightly distracted, but the purpose was to just cover a little bit.
No worries.
I think we covered the role of creatine. We also covered how it helps runners. And if runners decided to take this, take creatine as a supplementation, the right way of loading and then maintaining is important. And also what you said is so important, that it is actually a supplementation. So it should be considered that it's a supplement and not the whole of it. The training, the sleep, the recovery, and the nutrition is a lot more important before it comes to supplementation. And these sum up the conversation and the topic of the discussion today. I wanted to see where do you think is research going on creatine, and what is keeping you busy going forward?
Yeah, so I would like to bring kind of exercise from the real world into the laboratory. So I think what happens in races is you actually speed up or slow down, you change pace. There's like the finishing kicks at the end of the race are very important. Trying to simulate some of those things in the laboratory, I think, is really important, because I think that's where creatine can have kind of its biggest impact. So hopefully we can conduct some, you know, really good creatine endurance studies that simulate what actually happens in the real world. So that's one of my goals kind of moving forward with creatine.
Awesome. So it will be more like in a controlled setting, people are running or cycling for a number of hours. Is that what will it entail, and have certain variables to mimic the environment of the race, etc.?
Yeah, so I think when you're actually racing, you might speed up or slow down depending on your competitors. And I think trying to understand the impact of creatine in that situation is very important. Most of the studies, they just have them exercise at a certain power output or a certain speed, and they might measure how long they can go. But I don't think they're going to truly see the benefit of creatine in those situations. It's where you actually are changing pace and making decisions during a race actually where creatine can really show its true colors.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, no, true. And because also the nature of it is such that it helps you push a little harder later. It may help you generate power and force as you're going up, etc. So I guess, yeah, it seems pretty aligned. And we look forward to seeing what comes out as a result of it. Huge thank you for being with us today. I think this was nice, crisp masterclass on creatine for endurance athletes, for sure.
Yeah, very happy to be here.
That was all. I hope you enjoyed as much as I enjoyed speaking with Dr. Scott Forbes. If you are loving the conversation and have something to say, please reach out to us. We are available on social media as well as via email, and you know how to reach. In the show notes of this conversation as well, you will find our contact details in one way or another. We love speaking with you and we love listening to you. Let's keep connecting and keep listening to Run With FitPage. Goodbye. Good luck.